The City Club of Boise is a nonpartisan forum dedicated to free speech and the open exchange of ideas on issues critical to the Intermountain Northwest. Its motto is, "Things happen when people start talking." You can find information regarding forums, salons, tours, and membership at cityclubofboise.org. The moderator for today's forum is Jen Schneider.
Hello, and welcome to today's City Club of Boise program, COVID-19, cybersecurity, and Idaho's elections. I'm Jen Schneider, a member of the City Club's Forums Committee and today's moderator. I want to welcome our radio listeners who will be joining us at a later date via Boise State Public Radio on KBSX 91.5 and its affiliates throughout Southern Idaho and Northern Nevada. Today's forum is available for our audience in large part because of our City Club partners and sponsors. I would like to take time to thank a few of these organizations that help us achieve our mission to ensure compelling conversations, engage citizens in a dynamic community. Our premier sponsor is Northwest Nazarene University and the NNU College of Business. Our annual sponsor is St. Luke's Health System. We also receive support from our forum series sponsors, AARP Idaho, Bank of Idaho, Climatech Corporation, Echelon Group, Micron, Pacific Source Health Plans, and Small Mine Development. City Club of Boise receives grant funding from the Idaho Humanities Council. Thanks also to our media partners, which include Boise State Public Radio, 670 KBOI, the Idaho Statesman, and Idaho Public Television, and to our university partners, U of I, Boise State, and NNU. Many thanks to those of you who support City Club of Boise with membership or a donation during registration. On to our panelists. First is Kathy Ackerman. Kathy is the Idaho County Clerk in Grangeville. She has worked for Idaho County for over 30 years and has been the elected clerk since 2011. Idaho County is the largest geographical county in the lower 48 states, has a population of just over 16,000 and slightly over 10,000 registered voters. Idaho County is also the only county in Idaho with two time zones, which I did not know before hosting this event today. Chad Houck, welcome, Kathy. Chad Houck is the Chief Deputy Secretary of State for Idaho. Prior to this role, Chad was a private consultant advising in operational and process improvements in the IT and commerce space. He has served on the Idaho Governor's Cybersecurity Task Force and collaborated with multiple other state and federal agencies on election cybersecurity. Welcome, Chad. Jacqueline J. Kettler is an assistant professor in the School of Public Service at Boise State University. She earned her BA at Baker University and her PhD from Rice University in political science. Her research focuses on American politics with an emphasis on state politics, campaign finance, elections, and women in politics. She's a frequent contributor here at City Club. Thanks for being here, Jackie. And last but not least is Phil McGrain. Phil currently serves as the Ada County Clerk of the District Court Elect. Phil was born in Pocatello, but grew up in Boise. After graduating from high school, he spent a year with AmeriCorps, working to support programs that bring low-income individuals and communities out of poverty. Phil has a bachelor's degree in philosophy from the University of Washington, a master's degree in public administration from Boise State, and a law degree from the University of Denver. Phil is also an active member of both the Idaho and Colorado State Bar Associations, but he believes his greatest accomplishment, and I'm glad it's lunchtime because I think we're going to make some people hungry, is in the world of competitive barbecue, including finishing 18th in the nation on the Sam's Club National Barbecue Tour in 2013. Phil's wife, Angela, who happens to be a vegetarian, his two daughters and young son enjoy traveling around with family to these events. Thank you so much to all of you for being here today. I'm going to start us off with sort of a broad question about voting. Listeners to today's forum, all of you know that voting is in the mail, in the news, almost in the mail. It's definitely in the mail. It's definitely in the news a lot these days. We hear a lot about absentee voting, voting by mail, early voting, provisional voting. What are some tips or concepts that might help you help voters keep these things straight? How do we vote by mail in Idaho, for example? So, Phil, maybe we'll start with you if you'll unmute yourself, and then we'll work around to some of the other panelists.
Sure. And I actually think it's a great way you framed it. The voting is in the mail right now. And this, you know, you gave a great introduction. And I think it's great to have Kathy and I here together, because as we were preparing for this, and I think, as you know, Kathy's county is 8 times the size geographically of Ada County. But we have 270 times as many registered voters, which when I learned that, that made Ada County feel very crowded. Yeah, I see the graphic up there. It highlights it. But to really put it into scale, I was just informed right before our chat today that today we received roughly 14,000 ballots back in the mail here in Ada County just today alone. So the election is well underway. We have a lot of ballots out there. And to your ultimate question, we have 3 main ways to vote. We have absentee voting, which is where we will mail you your ballot and you can mail it back to us. Or as the questions may come, you can use one of our drop boxes or drop it off at the county courthouse. Early voting has begun in parts of the state. In Ada County, it will begin next Tuesday, where it's in-person voting. It just happens prior to Election Day. And it's very much like Election Day voting. It's just you can go to one of the early voting sites or any, whichever one you choose. And then we will have in-person voting throughout the entire state on Election Day, November 3rd. It'll be available just your traditional polling location with a few extras added due to COVID that I'm sure we'll talk about as we go on today.
Great. Thank you, Phil. Phil talked about receiving just an extraordinary number of ballots just today. Kathy, are you seeing sort of similar types of turnout where you are?
Well, it's embarrassing to even say this because you're going to say it. That's hardly worth counting. But we've received 807 back in the mail already. We sent out about 4,800 absentee ballots. It's a great turnout returning back already comparative to our size. I guess you could say it's, you know, a similar response. One thing I would add to Phil's types of voting, we also have mail out precincts in our county. And I think you're going to find that in rural counties of Idaho. So all of our mail out precincts are less than 125 registered voters. That means, this is where it gets confusing for people, we automatically mail all of those registered voters a ballot, which where this gets muddied is then you have the absentee concept where you have to request an absentee ballot. So when we have both in our county, people get a little flustered or upset about, you know, my neighbor got a ballot automatically mailed to them and I had to request one. Why does that happen? And so we're prepared to answer those questions, but I think larger counties don't have to deal with that mail out precincts. And I have 5 in my county.
Yeah. Thanks, Kathy. Chad, did you want to jump in and set the stage here?
Sure. So thank you, first of all, for the opportunity to join both Kathy and Phil here, as well as Jacqueline. In Idaho so far, we've had 383,663 ballots requested as of this morning. Now, if we take a look at that and forecast that out against the 2016 presidential election, we only saw a total of 710,000 ballots cast in that election cycle, November of 4 years ago. So we're obviously looking at a completely different and very historic opportunity for Idaho here. It will be the first time that we've had that many absentee ballots ever sent out. Old absentee levels used to look like something in the 10, maybe 15% range at the high end. And now we're seeing those numbers approaching what looks like it could be as high as 40 or 50%. We're going to have to wait and see how many of those absentee ballots come back. So as we know, we just had this past May's primary and we sent out a little over 420,000 ballots, only about 350,000 of those came back. So about a 75 to 80% use rate on them. One of the things we're anticipating in this next election, some folks that did receive their absentee ballot, making a decision at the last minute that they actually want to vote in person. So we'll want to make sure we touch on procedures for that, which should be pretty consistent across the state as well. One of the things that's important to understand there, all of these ballots, the reason we can give you those numbers down to the number, to 663 ballots, is because every ballot is inventoried. And that's one of the big differences in how Idaho handles things and manages our situations here. Every ballot in every county is accounted for. And I think that's a big important thing for Idaho voters to understand as we go forward.
Jackie, there's been a lot of conversation at the national level about voting security, prompted in no small part by comments made by the president about mail-in voting. What do you think when you think about the security of voting by mail, what are some of the anxieties voters at the national level have about vote by mail processes?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of concerns about ballots being counted correctly, right? And then also like influence, and you hear about like ballot harvesting happening where, you know, there's a third party trying to encourage or pick up those types of things, ballots. So you see those types of concerns come up as well as, you know, who's actually doing the voting. So some concerns about who's actually voting. I think Chad mentioned a little bit about the security in Idaho. We're tracking each ballot. One thing to keep in mind, right, is our elections are state and local run. And so states, you know, design our election systems and then local governments administer them. So we have 50 different election systems in the country. And so while, you know, it's, you know, we get a lot of messaging from the national media, national government, it's key to remember that the key elements on for our elections are at the state and local level, which is why it's so important to understand your state and local rules and know how to, you know, knowing that you need to request an absentee ballot and those types of items. And so I think that's a key thing to remember throughout all of this, is that it really does, what's happening at the state and local level really matters here.
Kathy, are you hearing anxieties, concerns, fears from voters in Idaho County about the security of elections?
I think that people here are concerned about Postal Service because, you know, to be honest, we don't have overnight delivery in Grangeville. So it takes longer for letters that we mail to reach people and for those letters to come back. Everything that's mailed in Grangeville goes to Spokane, and then it's sorted and rerouted and distributed back. So that is something that is concerning to people. However, it's nothing that we're not used to all the time anyway. So, you know, we're trying to alleviate those fears that people have. Our local post office is awesome, as are all of the rural post offices. So there is some skepticism just about postal service, but in general, we're kind of used to that anyway. So I think that we'll be able to get over that hump.
Chad, what would you say to put voters' minds at ease about security?
Well, first, I want to touch on the comment that Kathy just brought up with the United States Postal Service. And this really does kind of tie into that ballot security question. Just recently, we had a small issue that came up with some mail pieces that were sent out across the state, about 100,000 of them. And the U.S. Postal Service response to that was actually tremendously reassuring. Within a day, we had a conference call set up at the U.S. Postal Service's request. They had 20 individuals on that call from the United States Postal Service, along with our Secretary of State contacts, just to make sure that we were comfortable and that we understood that they had made measures literally reaching from here all the way down to Phoenix, Arizona, to try and adjust something that they saw coming down their pipeline. It was proactive on their part. And I think the thing out of that that I want to point out is that the U.S. Postal Service, we have a 2 to 5 day delivery expectancy with all of our first class mail. We do use first class mail here in Idaho exclusively for outbound. And the timeliness, they are very, very interested in keeping that timeliness and keeping that reputation high here in the Pacific Northwest, whether that's out of Spokane, as Kathy mentioned, whether that's out of the Salt Lake sorting area as well, or even with some of our absentees going anywhere in the regional area, as far as down to the Phoenix Postal Service and in that area as well. Now, past that, security-wise, keeping in mind that absentees, I actually happen to have mine right here. And one of the big keys that we want voters to know, every aspect of this piece of paper is important. It's the little yellow dot that you can see right there coming through. That's the privacy envelope that's inside of that. You'll notice a hole in the privacy envelope, and that's so that they can see that there's actually a ballot inside of the privacy envelope or the secrecy sleeve. And then this lets them know that there is a secrecy sleeve in this envelope. It's signed here. You've got barcodes on it. Those barcodes tie to a voter's registration information. All of that information has to match before the county clerks, whether it's in Idaho County for Kathy or whether it's our largest with Ada County and Phil's team. Those signatures are going to be independently verified one-on-one every single envelope before they're ever opened and moved through the process. And we looked at it, counted it down. There's over 14 ballot security measures that go into play on an absentee ballot from the point where it's requested by the individual until the time that it actually gets set into a tabulator or hand counted, depending on the county that we're dealing with. So tremendously complex and well-established process that we've been using since the 70s that we've now just scaled up significantly with the over 1,400% increase that we've seen in the use of absentee ballots.
Thanks, Chad. Phil, I wonder if you would be willing to talk a little bit about some of the misinformation that circulates, particularly on social media, about voting and voting security. And what advice you might have for folks who feel like they're getting conflicting information or they haven't heard sort of what Chad just said about all of the measures that go into ballot security.
Sure. I don't know. That's pretty broad, because if I could keep up with all the misinformation online, that would be a full-time job for all of us right now. I think one of the biggest things is when you have questions about the voting process, contact your local county. Contact the clerk's office, your elections office, and get information from a trusted source. I think that's one of the biggest things this year. We've seen it where even as one of my staff who handles communication said, people can be dangerous online because they know just enough, but they don't know all of it, right? And so I think, you know, as Chad just outlined, which thank you, Chad, for highlighting the great work our office is doing to get you and others their ballot. But all of those steps, things like signing it, but we've gotten a lot more questions this year. I mean, absentees, most people have never voted absentee before. This is their first time this year, back in the primary and now in the general election. So there's some uncertainty. And then you lay on this national context. And I think Jackie touched on it well. There's this national debate and dialogue that's going on. And so someone may see something, whether it's the presidential debate or somewhere else, that doesn't mean it trickles down inherently here in Idaho. I think we've got very good laws in place, and we are actually very accessible in terms of voting, whether that's the absentee process, the availability of early voting, our same day registration process. Many of those things are things that other states wish they had. I think the special session that we had this year by the legislature, I think Kathy and I can both attest, without some of those changes, it'd be very difficult to process the enormity of the amount of work that we're doing right now. And so we've really tried hard to work together and to prepare for this election. But if you have any questions about your absentee ballot or what early, you know, in-person voting may look like because you're concerned about your health or something else, contact your clerk's office. That's the best source, whether that's online through the website or just calling them up. Go to a trusted source because that really makes a difference this cycle.
We have a great question from someone in the audience who wants to know more about the emergency provision that was enacted during the special legislative session, which Phil, you just mentioned. So would you or Kathy mind maybe expounding on what was decided at that special legislative session with regard to voting?
Sure. I'll go ahead and take that. I was the point of the spear on this. I was, for those who watched the special session and at times the circus that was going on, I always felt like I was in the eye of the storm. Elections was actually the most prominent topic during the special session. It just didn't get as much attention as everything else did. We had a number of bills, and actually it was a great instance where all of the county clerks, elected clerks throughout the state, were asking for assistance as a united front, along with the Secretary of State, Denny, because we do need to prepare for this election in the unprecedented circumstances. The bill that was passed, Senate Bill 1, related to absentee ballots. So the deadline to mail all of those absentee requests that we've received all summer long was on Monday. And so all counties, they could have started mailing earlier than that, but all ballots from those original requests have now gone out across the entire state. That's actually slightly later than historically, because we needed extra time to handle the volume. Chad mentioned, you know, the 380,000 that have been requested. On our first day, we mailed 115,000 ballots just here in Ada County. And to really put that into comparison, in 2016, only 29,000 ballots were cast absentee in its entirety for that election. So in one day, we did four times as many and are doing huge mailings every day since. And so we needed time to handle that. The bigger change, though, and where City Club members will see this is on the back end. It gave us 7 days to start opening and scanning the absentee ballots in advance of Election Day. Because of the volume, it's just going to be a Herculean effort to actually just physically open, remove the paper ballot, flatten it out, and get it through our scanners. We won't actually be tabulating results at that point. That will happen after the polls close. But just that logistics process, especially with things like social distancing, finding the space and the people to do that is a huge challenge. But it will enable us to most likely, I truly believe throughout the state, we will have results when we would typically expect them for this election. So going into Tuesday night and Wednesday morning, for a county my size, it's going to take into Wednesday morning. Kathy may, hopefully for her sake, be able to go to bed earlier than I will that night. But we will have results soon where I think around the country, that's going to be one of the biggest challenges we watch. Some states like Idaho have adapted to the circumstances and others haven't. And so it may take a while to get results across the country.
Jackie, would you be willing to weigh in a little bit on why there is so much concern across the country about trying to get a good, accurate count of ballots close to Election Day?
Yeah, I think one important element here is that I think we've seen decreasing confidence in elections over time. And I think in a 2019 poll, 6 out of 10 Americans said they weren't confident in the honesty of U.S. elections. And that's concerning in terms of how legitimate we view our governments, how fair and free we view our democracy. And so we're seeing these concerns. And then if you're having a long time, you don't get results quickly, that just kind of raises those concerns, right? Like, well, was there interference in the election? What's happening? And so I think that's the concern, is that you start to raise more concerns about the honesty and legitimacy of the election.
Yeah, I have a related question from somebody in the audience, and Chad, maybe you'd be willing to take this one. I think this is in reference to sort of a call that the president made during a recent debate about encouraging some of his followers to go out and watch the polls. So one of our audience members would like to know, what's the process by which somebody can become a poll watcher? And what would happen if people just start showing up to observe the polls in a sort of unofficial way?
So poll watchers, thank you for the question. Poll watchers are actually defined in Idaho code, and it does state that a poll watcher has to be assigned or requested by either a candidate representing either side of a ballot measure, if a particular ballot measure is on the ballot, or representing a party. Those are specifically requested in advance. So that you have to be an official designated poll watcher. You don't just show up and say, I'm here to watch the polls. Otherwise, you're basically loitering at that point in time and you can be asked to leave. There is still that right to be able to assemble and maybe even protest if you wish. But that gets into electioneering. And electioneering statute says that you need to be at least 100 feet away. So what's going to happen in most cases is you're going to see chief judges or the organization setting up the poll. They're going to set a sign a lot of times about 100 feet away. So they have this benchmark to be able to point to and say, if you want to do that, you need to be on the other side of that sign. A lot of times it's a vote here sign, for example, but there's going to be something out there that's going to be kind of defining that 100-foot mark. It's often from the furthest corner of the building. It's a 100-foot safe space, basically, for electioneering. They're going to try and get that person to move outside of that space. If it still continues to be a problem and the chief judge of that particular precinct can't get that problem corrected, then they're going to reach out to their county clerk. That county clerk may call a sheriff's department or local PD to try and help rectify the situation. But that's generally what you're looking at in terms of Election Day, whether that's interference or the premise of intimidation. One of the other important things to understand is that there has been a lot of questions. We've received questions in our office in terms of folks possibly wearing a weapon to the polls. And again, that depends on, you know, Idaho, it is constitutional for folks to carry a weapon, either concealed or open. One of the exceptions to that would be if it's a polling location located in a school, that is still a school and the school rules apply there. So folks need to make sure they consider that. But again, just be respectful. If you see someone with a weapon on, that doesn't necessarily mean they're there to intimidate. And if you see someone, perhaps the best way to address that is just to not address it. Often they may be there looking for someone to try to bring that up. As someone who concealed carries quite frequently daily, you know, you don't often know how many people might be concealed carrying. And often the ones that do concealed carry the quietest are the ones that are, I don't want to say the most responsible by any means, but it's all over the state. We certainly have folks, and there are definitely responsible gun owners here in the state of Idaho.
Thanks, Chad. Kathy, I have a couple of sort of pragmatic questions. I think some folks in our audience have some concerns about their votes and their voting practices. So one question is, should we worry if our signature doesn't match what's on file, say maybe from years ago? So that's one question. And then another question is, I have my absentee ballot, but I've decided I want to vote in person, maybe early voting. Can I still do that? Would you be willing to address those?
Yes, I'd be happy to. So actually, Phil just sent out to our clerks group a great YouTube video that they sometimes use for training for signature verification. So to address the specific question, though, what if the signature doesn't absolutely match? So we've received numerous phone calls already. Can you check my registration? I don't know if I signed with the middle initial. My name's Kathleen, but I might have signed it Kathy. What do I do? And there is significant concern out there that we're going to reject those ballots that don't match identically, down to every little, you know, they used a blue pen this time, a black pen, you know, or last time and a black pen this time. And we don't get that specific, but there are definitely signature traits that we all have. And so we are trained, we look at those signature traits, and we work to verify, is this the same person? And, you know, we have people, though, who have registered 20 years ago, now they've had a stroke. You know, now there are different circumstances that can create problems. So generally, if we get a signature that doesn't match, and, you know, I'm not sure what Phil's process is for that, it's a little more manageable maybe here. But I do reach out to those people and indicate, you know, your ballot came through. It doesn't seem to match. There might be a legitimate reason. I want to always give people the benefit of the doubt and let them offer an explanation for why it doesn't match or meet our criteria for matching. In the primary, I had two that were like nowhere close, nowhere close. And I sent them a letter. One person reached back and said, well, I have two signatures. I'm like, okay, well, you need to decide on one. You know, we need to make this work. So anyway, and then the other question, I rambled so long, I forgot what your other question was. It was...
if they have an absentee ballot, but they decide instead now they'd like to vote like with early voting, can they do that?
Yes, thank you for reminding me. So yes, they absolutely can bring that ballot back. We really want to have that ballot back so that we know it's accountable. Some people will say they might show up at the polls without that ballot and they'll say, well, I threw it in the burn pile or it's in the garbage or my dog ate it or whatever it might be. We have our poll workers call us to verify, you know, again, we're in a situation where we don't have e-poll books. So We're on the edge of civilization here. They call us to verify that we don't, in fact, have an absentee ballot that's been returned. And in the event that we can confirm absolutely that no ballot has come back to us that's been voted, the poll worker will then reissue a ballot. Same as if they want to vote early here in the courthouse, they bring that ballot back and we will issue a new ballot for them in the event that we get that other ballot back.
Thanks, Kathy. All right, Phil, I have a comment and a question for you.
Maybe so can I add real quick what Kathy mentioned? And I think one of the great things, so we are larger, but we do things very similar to what she described in terms of, one, if we compare back to the May primary where we had 96,000 absentees submitted, only 0.6% of those were rejected here in Ada County. And of that 0.6%, three quarters of them were because people forgot to sign at all. It wasn't a matching issue. It was where they forgot to sign. So we're really just checking the authenticity of the signatures. And as she kind of alluded to, we're fortunate here where our systems locally communicate in real time. So if you return your absentee ballot and we're scanning them in here at the office, the poll workers at the polls know whether you've returned an absentee ballot or not. So if you decide not to vote, we know that you haven't returned it. And they'll issue you a new ballot at the polls. Like Kathy mentioned, we'd like people to bring their ballot and we'll spoil it there. But both early voting and on election day, it's available here just like it is in Idaho County.
So Phil, what happens if somebody has submitted their mail-in ballot and they forgot the secrecy sleeve, say that Chad showed us, or they forgot to sign? Will they get notification that their ballot won't be counted?
It all depends on what it is. So just like Kathy, now I won't personally reach out to them where Kathy might, someone in my office will, but we will. Typically the most common thing, it'll be a signature missing or like a spouse will sign the other person's signature. If there's any reason that it's going to impede their vote from being counted, we will reach out to them. We'll reach out to them one and hopefully an opportunity to rectify the situation. So come into the office, sign your ballot, we're good to go. But also we do it as a preventative measure. So if I call Chad and I say, hey, Chad, we noticed that your signature doesn't match here or whatever else. And he's like, what are you talking about? I didn't vote. That opens up the opportunity for us to start looking and work with the sheriff's office to look at any potential voter fraud issues. I think, you know, one of the big things in all of this is we are watching and monitoring everything throughout. Our systems are talking to each other, both on the front end and on the back end. And so we are working hard to prevent fraud and pursue that, but while trying to do that without impeding anybody's right to actually vote. And I think we've got a pretty good balance in terms of how we do that here, and we'll constantly be communicating with people, regardless of what county it is. I think everyone has those measures in place.
Okay, Phil, we're going to stick with you just for a second. One of our City Club members wants to just tell you that they called Ada County with a question about voting yesterday, and they were expecting a sort of long hold time on the phone, and instead they talked to a person right away and got their question answered. So that's some nice feedback for you and your office. Folks are wondering if Ada County is going to have mobile in-person early voting sites that move around like they have in the past.
Yes, we will. I mean, really, we're trying to respond on every level to this election. So the mobile voting unit will be out. The schedule for that is already published at adacountyelections.com. So it'll be in Star and CUNA, for example. We also will have four permanent sites. So for the 3 weeks, we will have the elections office here where I'm at right now. Instead of Boise City Hall, where we normally would be for spacing, we'll be over at the Basque Center, right just nearby. We'll be at Meridian City Hall, and then we'll also be at Eatville Hope Lutheran Church out on Highway 21. And so we have those four locations plus the mobile voting unit, trying to give everyone one of the health recommendations actually for this election with COVID is giving as many opportunities to spread voters out across as much time as possible. So including on election day and early voting, if that's one of the tools that we're using. So every opportunity will be available.
Okay, thanks, Phil. All right, I want to switch gears just a little bit, and maybe Chad and Jackie, you would be willing to jump in on this. Cybersecurity has become an issue in this election, maybe as a result of sort of some of our shifting alliances or international relationships. Word that we've got from the intelligence community that the United States is being targeted in different kinds of ways. So cybersecurity is frequently in the news. Chad, for you, what are some, as somebody who's worked on this, what are some of the major issues related to cybersecurity specifically that most concern you?
Well, thank you for that question as well, Jen. Cybersecurity is definitely, you know, since 2016, elections were declared critical infrastructure, and that really has changed the landscape and how we get to operate. It's also brought a lot of other resources to the table, because with that designation as critical infrastructure, we became partnered with Department of Homeland Security and with CISA, the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Administration. In that, we've been able to move all 44 Idaho counties into part of what's called the EIISAC, or the Elections Infrastructure Information Sharing and Analysis Consortium. A really long alphabet soup acronym for we talk to each other about cyber incidences, and we talk not only within the state, but from state to state. And just this morning, I wrapped up with our cyber team and a very unique integration with our military division here in Idaho, utilizing both the Guard unit at the Air Force or the Air National Guard and the Army Guard, where we actually deployed the Guard units in one of their readiness training exercises to utilize our election space as a training ground for them. So we had those operators being able to take a look at our systems. We were one of the first states in the country to ever be able to pull that off and put it into play. So there's a lot of new things that are happening in the cyberspace. The biggest challenge is actually not the the elections infrastructure in and of itself, but the more easy to access surface of just the general websites at both the county level and at the state level. It would be very difficult for a single individual actor to get into all 44 endpoints, if you will, of Idaho's election system at a county level and manipulate either vote counts or tabulation totals or anything of that nature. It would be a lot easier, however, for someone to go after a county website, for example, and just take that county website and say, hey, in Bannock County, elections are canceled or postponed until tomorrow. And if something like that were to happen, again, now you're dealing with disinformation, misinformation, or malinformation, three different flavors there. But that's more likely the threat surface that we're going to see somebody really interfering with and meddling with the election. Not the actual results, but the perception of those results and the perception of the integrity of the system. That's what we spend the most time worrying about. That's why we kicked off a 44 county tour earlier this season. We went to all 44 counties, helped them look at and assess where they were at on a kind of a baseline basis, and started doing inventory and control tools in all 44 counties to make sure that we're coming up to that baseline statewide.
Yeah, thank you, Chad. That was a super sophisticated answer. Jackie, I wonder for folks who are just starting to think about cybersecurity and elections for the first time, would you be willing to sort of comment, I think maybe in a more layperson's way, about what you see as the major challenges? So we talked a little bit about some of the websites being hacked. What else should we be?
Yeah, I in some states, right, like there's a lot use of a lot of electronic voting machines. And so when those went online, there's a lot of concerns about hacking into those and actually, you know, messing up not just when people were voting, but also changing the out, you know, what the outcomes, how those were being translated into votes. I mean, it's actually really interesting, right? I think this election would have so much more focus on cybersecurity if we weren't dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. And that really kind of shifted our focus to where it's just trying to actually carry out the election on some of the basic elements. And so I don't think quite as much attention has been played for many citizens on cybersecurity. But I think there is, I think where we really can be concerned about is some of on the information side, as Chad was mentioning, especially when thinking about things that pop up on social media and connected with all these other elements, that we start to get more concerned about not just the information being provided, but also people's perceptions of interference in elections as well.
Chad, one more thing to add there. Yes, thank you. You know, and one of the important things to understand in Idaho, when you see information that comes out on election day or shortly before, shortly thereafter, one of the fabulous fallbacks that we have here in Idaho is that at the end of the day, every single ballot is reduced to paper. Doesn't matter the mechanism that ballot was cast. If it was cast absentee, if it was cast early, if it was cast using an adaptive voting machine on election day or in early voting, it doesn't matter how that ballot was cast. At the end of the day, it is paper. And that means we can go back at any time, in any location, in any jurisdiction, and we can audit that election trail. So ultimately, we can get back to the right number no matter what. That's a super important thing to realize here in Idaho.
Chad, if we can just stick with you for 1 minute, we do have some questions about fraud with the registration process. So let's say we understand that ballots can be traced and tracked, and our audience members are happy to hear about that. Is there a possibility for folks to register to vote sort of illegitimately?
So I had this conversation just the other day with someone that was talking about their the infamous narrative of their dog was registered to vote. And the question that I had to ask them was, okay, so how exactly did that happen? If you've said you've heard about it, is it more of a wives' tale or did it actually happen? In order for that to happen, one of three things would have to happen. One, the dog would have to have a fake ID in order to actually process. And that ID number would have to somehow be tied to a state driver's license number that provided a signature so that they could utilize online registration. What I mean by that is it impossible for a dog to get a fake ID? Probably not. Just ask a college student, it might be possible. But the reality is when you go online to register, we're cross-checking the State Department of Motor Vehicles database with that driver's license or state issued ID number. And we're grabbing the signature from that DMV file and bringing it over while verifying other pieces of information in that registration request. Now that same process is used to get that absentee ballot request to process as well. So that's why only those with state issued IDs or state driver's license can utilize the online system. If we step out of that space and come to a paper registration, you're only doing that in one of two ways. You're going to paper register by mail, which has its own set of statutes. And in that situation, if you requested a absentee ballot, you'd be required to provide an ID with that mail-in registration and ballot request. There's a statute that says before a ballot can be issued on a mail-in registrant that an ID has to be verified against that registrant. If you're in person, well, then you've got an in-person. They would have had to walk their dog up to the counter and get that dog to sign the registration card in order to get them registered to vote. So as you can see, there's a lot of nuance to each one of the processes. There's a very big complexity in the number of processes that exist, but the coverage is there. And more often than not, it's misunderstanding or a lack of understanding of all those different processes that lead to the stories that are out there, the bad information that's out there on the net.
So very unlikely that my dog Peanut will be voting in this election is the bottom line. Okay. Phil and Kathy, question for you. Of course, Jackie mentioned that COVID is really the larger context that makes this election so interesting, unique, challenging. For folks who do want to vote in person, whether early voting or on election day, and who are worried about health concerns and being protected in an age of COVID, walk us through, for both of your counties, what it will be like when somebody shows up to their polling place. What can they expect to see and experience? Phil, we'll start with you.
All right, I'm happy to start. So the first thing that voters will see is actually we have posters that we've made for every polling location that ask voters to wear a mask, maintain social distance, and also ask for patience. As I mentioned earlier, we've tried to secure larger polling facilities. So some of the locations we might traditionally vote in, we've moved out because it was just too small of a space. So instead of seeing the voting booths shoulder to shoulder in a row, you'll actually see them spaced out this election, just to keep that distance. We are asking voters to wear a mask. We aren't mandating it necessarily, so that's something to know. I think for those who truly have health concerns, absentee ballots are the safest means to vote in the midst of the pandemic. All of our poll workers, though, you will see wearing masks and or face shields as they are processing people. And we're providing writing utensils for every voter, so they don't have to share writing utensils. I know other counties are doing the same. Just trying to take every measure. We actually have added a poll worker dedicated to sanitizing the space periodically throughout the day, as well as working to provide hand sanitizer when you come in and having masks available for those who may come and not have one. So a lot of work's been put into, normally we have a tote that we send out. Well, now we have a PPE tote dedicated to helping try to keep the space safe on election day. And we've worked really closely with Central District Health here locally to come up with protocols and procedures. It's been a real close partnership for this election to address the health concerns. And I know I've shared that information across the state with the other clerks and have heard pretty similar stories in terms of people preparing for what the polls will look like. I feel confident it will be just as safe and most likely much safer than even going to the grocery store. But we're trying to make sure we have every precaution in place to make sure people have the right to vote and can be heard, but also maintaining that public health at the same time.
And a quick follow-up for you, Phil. There was some good news coverage a few weeks ago that you were in need of poll workers, and then I heard you got a flood of volunteers. Are you all set for a poll workers on Election Day?
We did. We were overwhelmed by the response in terms of people willing to serve at the poll. So we're very fortunate. We're right in the process of lining everybody up and getting them trained. And it takes, I don't know if many members realize, it takes 1,300 poll workers here locally just to run the polls. It is a major logistics operation to pull all of this together.
Thanks, Phil. All right, Kathy, what about you? What can voters in Idaho County expect in terms of COVID measures?
Well, thanks to Phil, who, as he mentioned, did share his protocol with the rest of the clerks in the state of Idaho. We had a template to work from. And so, you know, I have to just give a shout out to Phil for all the work that he does for all of the clerks around the state in many areas, but in elections especially. So we did have a basic protocol that's very similar to Ada County's. The challenge that we have is because we are so rural and we are so spread out, we're dealing with really a lack of desirable or adequate polling locations. So we have, you know, smaller places. There's not always an opportunity for people enter through one door and exit through another. So those are the types of challenges that we have to deal with is how do we make the spaces that we have in the current polling locations that we have work in this new environment? So we did meet with our chief judges last week. They each brought a diagram of their polling place. We asked them to think about, you know, what can we do to social distance? How can we maybe improve the flow in and out? At the same time, we're probably not going to be dealing with six people in the place at one time, as Phil will be dealing with. You know, there's just not that problem for us to deal with. But again, it's something that I think is, you know, an odd positive through this whole thing is getting people to think about their surroundings, their polling locations, you know, how to think outside the box, and what if some other situation or circumstance occurs, how would we deal with that? So I think that we're up and running. I think that our voters, like Phil, many people are voting absentee. Many people are coming into the courthouse to vote. So I really don't expect a lot of traffic at those polling locations, which we're going to have opened and fully staffed. So they might have time to, you know, read a good book in between voters.
Great. Thanks, Kathy. Chad, did you want to jump in?
Sure. Thank you. As we've heard, you know, there's a lot of preparation that's going into this. And I think that's one of the things that we want to reiterate to voters is we've done on the county side and at the state side, we've done our work to prepare. And now it's kind of in the hands of the voters to do their work to prepare. And what I mean by that is make your decisions on what you're going to do. Absentee is an option to you right now. If you feel that you're going to need that absentee ballot, let's make sure that it gets requested soon so that you can get it turned around and get sent back in. If you're going to use early voting, then go ahead and as soon as that opens up, go take care of that. That helps the counties out as well. And then finally, if you're going to vote on election day, and if you already know that, make sure you know where that is. You've heard both counties say that there have been changes in polling locations, both to accommodate size or spacing issues or just availability of venues for whatever reason. Make sure you go and look at where that polling location is going to be. You can do that at Idaho Votes, idahovotes.gov. So go there and check your voter record and it'll show you your polling location there. Or you can reach out to the most trusted source of information that you can get in your county, which is your county clerk themselves. So make sure as a voter that you're informed as to where it is that you need to show up if you're going to vote on election day.
Just like to remind our radio listeners that you are listening to a City Club of Boise virtual conversation featuring Phil McGrain, Kathy Ackerman, Chad Houck, and Jackie Kettler. So Jackie, question for you, just for the panel, actually, I just want to tell you that I'm getting lots of like, phew, from folks who are feeling very reassured about election processes in Idaho. So thank you for all of your hard work. Jackie, the question that came in was, what about other states? What sort of concerns are we seeing in places like California or some of our southern states where maybe it hasn't been the preparation that we've seen here in Idaho.
Yeah, there's definitely variation across states, right? And we want to keep in mind, some states don't really have the system built for no excuse absentee ballots. Some states you have to provide an excuse. So that's just requiring more work to kind of go through that process. So there's just more institutional kind of barriers or hurdles anyways. But we're also seeing some states struggling on, you know, having enough places to drop off ballots or trying to secure enough poll workers who tend to be more elderly or spaces to have, you know, for polling. So there's definitely more challenge. There's, you know, different states are facing different sorts of challenges, but I definitely think that one thing's clear, just the effort that everyone in Idaho has been putting in to make sure the election here can go off without too much concern. But I think we will definitely see pretty long lines in some states, that especially those states that have a shorter early voting period. And that's where you start to get real concerns. We've already seen some long lines forming, I guess people just really raring to make sure that they get their vote in. And so I think those are the sorts of things that will be of concern as we move in and as people continue to vote in the election.
And Jackie, a quick follow-up, I have a question from someone who's concerned about states where the presidential election might be very close, and maybe those states are also essential swing states, and it could be that those votes take some time to tally. As a political scientist, do you have concerns about that? What's sort of your take on what this election day could look like this year?
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty used to getting pretty quick results, right? I mean, we think back to 2000, we didn't, and it definitely created some confusion and some concern for a while, right? I remember staying up late and it, you know, keep seeing news, you know, switching where Florida was going. And so I think that what we hope to see is not people trying to call it earlier and then needing to switch as votes, you know, trying to take the time to actually accurately count, give, you know, not try to do early calls that may create kind of confusion, since people may be a little concerned in general, just since we're not getting an early result as usual in some of those swing states.
Thanks, Jackie. Phil, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, Jen, I think it's going to be a really interesting election because of all the challenges with COVID. Just to highlight one specific example, it took New York State 6 weeks to process their absentees for the primary election. So some congressional races were actually in play for 6 weeks after Election Day. That's where I think there's going to be a ton of concern. And if you see that in a battleground state, that's going to make a really big difference. And I think exactly what Jackie said in terms of just confidence for all of us, especially. I feel very blessed not to be in a battleground state. I can't imagine doing this job every day right now, let alone if I were in one of those states. But I also think something to watch, I'll point out, because it's going to play out here in Ada County as well. We have some competitive local races that I do think people will be watching very closely. Is there's going to be this, because of the processes we've set up, there will be a ton of early and absentee votes posted very early on election night. So the first indicator, that's always the case. You have this first indicator, it's kind of the absentees. It might have a predisposition one way or the other. And then you'll start to see the polling places trickle in. And so we usually see this kind of shifting along in the results. And the politicos know kind of what to watch. One of the big changes, and we saw it for the first time, and this is why I mention it, is with all these huge absentees, probably the biggest day of absentee return will be Election Day itself. The people who wait to the last minute. I mean, I watched at the drop box in the primary where there are people up to 8 p.m., dropping them in the box, and we'll be prepared for that. But so you'll actually see this secondary flow of absentees much later in the morning. There's some talk about that, but just the shifting of how results come out will be an interesting thing where someone may say, oh, it's trending this way. Well, just because it's trending one direction doesn't mean it won't pivot and transition another direction just based on the region or the type of ballots that are coming in at that time. And I think it's going to be one of those things that will cause, I'm guessing, you know, social media and others, there'll be a lot of discussion and debate as people are following the results, trying to figure out what is this flow, because it isn't going to fit the normal pattern because these big absentee numbers have changed the business process on just how you get the votes counted.
And Phil, maybe I'll ask you to answer our last question for today, which is folks had some good questions about voting accessibility, say for people for whom English isn't their first language, or if they're military personnel. What kinds of accommodations or accessibility do you think about for those folks?
Yeah, it kind of depends. And so we actually have, just depending on different groups, because I think you touched on a number. So for example, the military and overseas ballots were sent out, the very first ones early on. And even there's actually a small subset. It's a really specific group where we actually email the ballot. So if you're in Afghanistan, it can be hard to get that ballot to you. It still has to be mailed back. So we have some steps there. Also, the next time you're at your polling location, if you are paying attention, you'll notice that there's actually equipment set up for voters with disabilities. All polling locations are ADA accessible, and we go to great lengths to make sure. So sometimes they just fit, but you may see temporary ramps or parking spaces. But there's actually the ability for a voter to vote independently on their own, who say they're completely blind or they have digital impairments. We go to great lengths to try and provide as many tools. Language barriers varies actually by county, just based on the makeup of the population. That one's just one of those things that varies depending on where you are. But one of the things too, if someone ever needs assistance, you are always free to bring someone with you, right? Whether it's a family member or someone else, and you choose, that's the way you choose. But also we try to make sure everyone has an independent option too. So, you know, maybe your spouse doesn't vote the way you do. You can still cast that vote to cancel theirs out later and they don't have to know about it.
Good. Kathy, did you want to add anything to that from sort of a smaller county perspective?
I don't really have anything to add to that. We don't really have a Hispanic population here. So if we do have people that have challenges like that, as Phil mentioned, they'll bring someone along who can kind of translate and help. So we try to make the best of what we have, you know, moving forward so we can accommodate people. We're always willing to help them whatever they need.
Okay, thanks. So you've been listening to a City Club of Boise virtual conversation featuring Phil McGrain, Kathy Ackerman, Chad Houck, and Jackie Kettler. And from me and from all of our audience, I just want to thank you so much. You've really performed a service today, helping people understand some of the complexities around voting and elections, and very grateful for your time. And for the rest of you listening, make sure to get out and vote. Thanks so much.
This broadcast of the City Club of Boise was made possible with help from the Idaho Statesman, Idaho Public Television, 670 KBOI, and Boise State Public Radio. The premier sponsor is Northwest Nazarene University and the NNU College of Business. The annual sponsor is St. Luke's Health System. The City Club is a nonpartisan forum with the motto, "Things happen when people start talking." Forum series sponsors for the City Club of Boise are AARP Idaho, Bank of Idaho, Climatech Corporation, Echelon Group, Micron, Pacific Source Health Plans, and Small Mind Development. Additional grant funding comes from the Idaho Humanities Council, a state-based partner of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Coming up on October 27, 2020, a virtual conversation about the economic and operational challenges facing Boise's restaurants, bars, and music venues with entrepreneurs Dave Crick, Rocky Johnson, and Eric Gilbert. Register for that forum and learn more about becoming a member and see a schedule of coming events at cityclubofboise.org. Connect on social media by searching for City Club of Boise.